This is Austin Carr from your Cleveland Cavaliers, and you're listening to Kenny and JT on News Talk 1480 WHBC.
Thanks, AC. Time to talk some NBA Finals and Cavs basketball right now by going to the hotline, bringing in the outstanding Cavaliers beat reporter, Cleveland.com, Plain Dealer. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Fedor. He is Chris Fedor. How are you, C-Fed?
What's going on, guys? I'm doing great. How are you?
Hey, we're great. Thanks for making time for us. I know it's technically your off season, but the finals aren't over yet, even though the Cavs aren't playing in them, Chris. So we wanted to get your thoughts on where this is at right now. 2-1 in favor of Denver with game number 4 tonight. Are you surprised that the Heat have won one game, or are you buying into the Heat still having a chance in this series?
I'm buying into the Heat having a chance, guys, because like they're the kind of team that you just can't write off. They're tough as hell. They're well coached. They've got a superstar in Jimmy Butler. Bam Adebayo is one of the most disruptive defensive players in the NBA. He's been in the league 6 years. He's been on an all-defensive team 4 of those years. And they've got tons of shooting. And we saw it in one of the games already in this series, and we saw it throughout the entire series against the Celtics, that the Heat can make 15 to 20 threes a night. They can shoot 38 to 46% from three-point range, and they just have so many different offensive threats and offensive weapons that opposing defenses have to be cognizant of, that it makes it difficult on opposing defenses to load up to slow down Bam or load up to slow down Jimmy. And because they have that balance, because they have that prolific three-point shooting, because they have who I would say is the best coach in the entire NBA, and because they've been there, done that, they've been in these type of situations before, they're just the team that I don't think you can write off. And it's so funny, guys, because throughout the course of the year, everybody around the NBA was like, oh, I don't know about the Heat, right? Like, At some point, they're going to figure it out, maybe, possibly. And when they do figure it out, it's going to be a lot different than it was in the regular season. And they found a way to be at their best and peak when it mattered the most. And I just think that's the kind of team that can be dangerous in a 7-game series.
Chris, let's talk about these head coaches for a second, because when we heard Mike Malone yell at his team for not playing defense, and you talk about the three-point shooting and their lack of defense in game, what was it, 3-2, where they lost to the Heat, and the Heat seemingly missing shots that were wide open in game one. A lot of people think maybe if those shots go in, maybe they sneak out the first 2 games. I don't know. But as it pertains to the coaches, Michael Malone seemingly has the ear of his team. Spoelstra, we know, is probably a great coach. Are we making too much out of this, or do we just not see enough and know enough about the Denver Nuggets?
In terms of what?
In terms of, we don't get to see them enough. Do they have a tendency to slack off defensively?
I think they have a tendency to sometimes think that things come too easy for them on the offensive end. That sometimes they don't value the possession that they need to value at the highest level, and sometimes they don't go to their pet sets throughout the course of the game, and sometimes they do play around with the game a little bit too much, both offensively and defensively. And I think that's all predicated on and it doesn't always burn them, right? Because they have so much talent and they have so much offensive firepower. But I think that's just a habit that teams that can score with such ease throughout the course of the regular season sometimes build. And I think it's also a habit that teams that haven't been on this stage sometimes don't recognize quick enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, Miami's been there, done that. Jimmy Butler has been in so many playoff series, way more than Jamal Murray, way more than Nikola Jokic. And, like, the main components of the Denver Nuggets, they just haven't been to the same place that some of the Miami Heat players and coaches have been to. And I think there's just a natural letdown sometimes, especially when you get up 15 to 20 and things are going so well for you and things are coming so easy, that sometimes you do let your foot off the neck of the opponent. And if you do that against Miami, they're more capable of making teams pay than maybe some of the other teams that the Nuggets faced in the Western Conference en route to the NBA Finals.
Sounds like a team that wears wine and gold, Chris, with some of those things you just said.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that the Cavs ran into in that series against the Knicks. And it's so interesting, right, because, like, you talk all the time and you say, well, the playoffs are this, right, and this is what the playoffs demand. And how is it possible that you can't bring a level of intensity to match the playoffs? And the thing that I always go back to is, and this is the same in life, you don't know what you don't know. So it's like one thing for Darius to hear over and over and over again, this is what the playoffs are, this is what's required on a nightly basis, and the same thing with Evan Mobley and Isaac Okoro and some of these other young guys. But if they've never been asked to get themselves to that level, like, they don't know how to get to that intensity level. They don't know what that feels like. They don't know what that looks like. They don't know how different that needs to be than what they do throughout the course of the regular season. And I think the playoff series against the Knicks was a huge learning experience for everybody inside the organization and the guys that hadn't been there. And as much as maybe you thought the Cavs were ready for that stage, it proved out after five games that they were not ready for that stage. Nobody was in the organization. Not even Donovan Mitchell was ready for that stage. And he had 39 games of playoff experience and a whole bunch of playoff success under his belt. And he wasn't ready to the level that he needed to be ready.
Chris, what about just releasing Kevin Love and seeing Kevin Love playing in the NBA Finals? He's not dominating, but he can get you 10 rebounds a night. He can hit you 3 3-pointers. And the Cavs gave him away for nothing on a team that lacked playoff experience. And we're hearing about how he fits the Heat culture and how important he's been in that locker room. Will the Cavs finally admit they made a mistake?
I think they need to have some regrets, but I think they also understand, because there's nuance to this kind of conversation when it comes to Kevin Love. And that's what I wrote the other day, guys. Like, yes, they need to have regrets about how everything went down, but, like, we can't bury our heads in the sand and pretend that the first 50 games of the season with Kevin Love didn't happen. He was bad. For half of the season, Kevin Love was one of, statistically, the worst players in the entire NBA. He was getting torched defensively. He couldn't hold up defensively the way that the Cavs needed him to run the schemes that they wanted to defensively. And he wasn't knocking down shots to make up for those defensive limitations. He was shooting like 30% from the field and 24% from three-point range in the final 15 games before he got pulled out of the rotation.
So wasn't he hurt, though?
Yeah, he was hurt. He was dealing with a back issue. He was dealing with a thumb issue. But, like, there also was the reality of a 34-year-old player, like, tailing off and not being as productive as he once was. So that was attached to it, too. And I think if JB was going to sit there and say, look, we're going to reward guys with minutes who are playing the best, who are the most effective, we're going to make everybody go out there and earn it. And if he was going to stick with Kevin Love when Kevin wasn't earning it, just based on his reputation, or make excuses for him based on the injury and stuff like that, I don't think that was going to go over well. And the other thing is, if JB was committed to pulling him out of the rotation because he wasn't effective, offensively or defensively, then, like, Kevin was going to look at the situation and say, well, what's my role here, right? And we know Kevin is a very, very emotional guy. And if he gets pulled out of the rotation and there's no clarity on how he could get back in the rotation, or if he would get back in the rotation, or how much playing time he was going to get moving forward, like, play that scenario out and see what happens with Kevin. Like, we all know how that goes, right? So I think that was a concern that the organization had. And they believed at the time that they were doing what was best for them and what was best for Kevin, but the way that it played out, there's no way that they can say that with an honest face right now.
Chris Fedor is our guest right now, Cleveland.com Cavs beat reporter. Yeah, I look at it this way too, Chris. Kevin Love thought he still had something left in the tank and he still wanted to play. But I look at it this way and think the Heat had no idea they were going to have to start him when he got there. Pleasantly surprised, I think. But when you think about what the Cavaliers did, I think they were forced into trying to play Danny Green. They had nobody to make outside shots. And even then, Danny Green didn't get the kind of minutes that Kevin Love was getting in Miami. Do you feel that when they took him, they thought they were going to have to rely on him or at least start him some of the time?
Yes, I do. And I think that's a big difference between the Cavs and the Heat. And I think that's a big difference between the Heat and the 76ers, the other team that he was rumored to be interested in, although I believe there wasn't a whole bunch of interest from Kevin's side in going to the 76ers. I believe that it was always the Heat, and it was always going to be the Heat, provided that they gave him the contract that he wanted and they gave him enough assurances about his role. But that was something that was always different between the Cavs and the Heat. Like, there was an opportunity for Kevin to get more playing time there because they theoretically needed what he brought to the table more than the Cavs did. And I say that understanding that they missed his shooting, they missed his floor spacing, they missed his rebounding against the Knicks. But the truth is, going into any playoff series, whether the Cavs were going to face off against the Knicks or the Brooklyn Nets or whoever it was going to be, Evan Mobley was going to be the starting power forward, and Evan Mobley was going to play between 38 and like 44 minutes a night. And the only path to Kevin getting on the court in this kind of setup was backing up Evan Mobley. And it was a very, very small opportunity. Whereas Miami, for the entire season, guys, they were trying to find an answer at power forward. Like, they used a bunch of different guys because they were trying to replace first Jay Crowder, then PJ Tucker, and they needed somebody who could bring the space-the-floor skill set next to Bam Adebayo. And they tried Caleb Martin at power forward, and they tried a bunch of different guys at power forward. So, like, there was an opening that Kevin Love was going to step into for the Miami Heat that just wasn't available for the Cavs, not at the level that he wanted it to be available for him, and not with the same level of clarity that he was going to get in terms of his role in Miami. So that was a big difference.
Yeah, thanks.
That there was a starting opportunity waiting for him.
Makes us feel worse about that deal now, then, because we needed those we needed those same attributes, didn't we?
Well, you did, sure, but like, Evan Mobley was going to play a majority of those minutes, and the Cavs weren't going to go away from Evan Mobley for a big stretch of a series or a game. So, yeah, like, theoretically, the Cavs needed this floor spacing, and they needed the shooting, and they needed the rebounding. But if you're Kevin Love, and they're saying to you, hey, you know, your role is backing up Evan Mobley, and it might be for 5 minutes one game, it might be none another game, it might be 10 another game, it might be none, none, none. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was just not a lot of clarity from Kevin and the Cavs on exactly how many minutes he was going to play, how many touches he was going to get. Like, all those things that he got in Miami were not available.
He accepted that role last year, though, Chris, and this year he couldn't shoot, like Kenny said.
Well, he's hurt, and his back, you know, his thumb bothered him, his back. Now he's healthy. You're seeing what he can do. I thought they should have kept him for an insurance policy, and that would have allowed them to sit Mobley for a few minutes and then bring Mobley back in and sit Allen for a few minutes, move Mobley to the five. So, you know, looking back on it, it was just like when they traded Kyrie Irving and didn't get enough for him in return. Those are major mistakes, in my opinion, at least, from Kobe Altman. Happy to have Chris Fedor with us, outstanding Cavs beat reporter, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter.
I think their biggest blunder was that they didn't cash in what was a trade asset at the deadline. Like, that's one of the things that the Cavs internally were thinking to themselves. Yeah, Kevin got a bloated contract, but that could, and they chose not to go that way too.
Yeah, so it didn't work out in any way, shape, or form for them. All right, Chris, before we let you go, off season. They need a wing, Chris. I'm sorry, Caris LeVert isn't the answer, although if they don't trade, you know, for somebody, that may be their only free agent opportunity, and that's not going to be enough after watching these playoffs. They're too soft. They don't shoot well from outside. They need a wing player. What are some potential opportunities maybe in a trade to get a wing player in here that can make a difference?
There aren't a whole bunch of those guys available on the trade market, at least guys that are going to significantly improve this roster. And the ones that are going to be available via trade, like, the Cavs really don't have the assets to go out and do it because they spent so many of those assets getting Donovan Mitchell. So I think what they could potentially explore is a sign-in trade for a free agent to be that is probably going to make more than the mid-level exception. The mid-level exception this year in free agency is $12.2 million. The Cavs have the full thing, but there are going to be a lot of teams that are in that same market. And there's going to be a lot of competition and a lot of teams looking for the same thing that the Cavs are going to be looking for this offseason. So there's going to be a battle for those kinds of players. But like if they make a little bit more than the mid-level exception, an example, Max Strus of the Miami Heat, who might make $15 million, Grant Williams of the Boston Celtics, who might make $15 million, Harrison Barnes, who might command close to $20 million on the open market, you know, Dante DiVincenzo, who's going to be right in that range. Like, those guys may take more than the mid-level exception, so the Cavs can't sign them outright, but they could potentially package, you know, Isaac Okoro and Jetty Osman, and they make the salaries match that kind of way, similar to what they did a couple of years ago when they stole Lauri Markkanen from the Chicago Bulls in the sign-and-trade. Like, that's probably their best path to getting that kind of guy, Kenny, that you're talking about, along with bringing back Caris LeVert, which is something that they want to do.
All right, my guy is Cam Johnson of the Nets, Chris. He's a restricted free agent, okay? That's my guy. You know, and they've got an excess there because, when you look at, you know, they made some great moves. See, they got value back when they traded Kyrie Irving. The Cavaliers did not. So I give the Nets credit for doing what they did. And when you look at their depth chart, I love Cam Johnson. He's a restricted free agent. Are they going to be able to keep both Mikal Bridges and Cameron Johnson?
No, I don't think so. But if they do, the Cavs won't be able to give Cam Johnson the kind of money and make him the kind of offer that would make him leave Brooklyn, right? They can't give him $25 million in free agency.
What about a sign and trade?
I mean, I don't know that they're going to have the components that are going to win that kind of battle if it's a sign and trade. Like, he's a hot commodity, and there are teams that are going to want him if he becomes available from the Nets. There are teams that are going to want him, and there are teams that are going to have better assets to give to the Nets in order for them to give up on a guy who was part of the KD trade. So, like, if you're them and all the Cavs could really get to match that offer in a sign and trade is, like, some combination of Jetty Osman and Isaac Okoro and maybe, like, Dean Wade, and then you could get a bigger package from another team, you're not going to say, give me Isaac Okoro, Jetty Osman, and Dean Wade. So, like, I asked somebody, Kenny, I'm like you. Like, he would be great for this team. He can play the three and the four. He can knock down shots. He can play defense well enough in this particular scheme, surrounded by Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So there's a lot to like about him. And the Cavs, by the way, worked him out in the draft when he was available before he rocketed up the board. So I asked a person in the NBA the other day, I said, hey, like, Cam Johnson for the Cavs, like, it's a no-brainer. He brings everything that they would theoretically need. What are the chances? And I got a text back, pipe dream. Because, like, that's the situation that the Cavs are in based on the limited assets that they could give to get that caliber player. I think they have to set their sights a little bit lower than Cam Johnson, despite the fact that his skill set would be a great fit here.
Chris, what about, and we got 30 seconds here, what about an wait till the season starts, an in-season trade where it's just matching up salary for him, and then he becomes your free agent, and then you can sign him to a contract after that. If the Nets, you think, if their season doesn't go the way they want it to, that could be a possibility or no?
I just don't think the quote-unquote expendable players that the Cavs have on this roster are the kind that are going to get that caliber of wooing. I think they have to set their sights a little bit lower. Unless they decide that they want to break up their core four, and I would say Jared Allen would be the most expendable there.
Absolutely.
But, you know, a center in today's NBA is not going to match the value of a player like Cam Johnson in today's NBA. So you would have to sweeten that deal much, much more, and I just don't know that the Cavs have enough assets to do that kind of deal after giving up everything they gave up to get Donovan.
Great stuff, Chris, as always. Thanks for the insight, my friend. We'll talk again down the road. Be well, all right?
All right. Sounds good, guys. See ya.
There he is, Chris Fedor, Cavs beat reporter. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Fedor. Read him at cleveland.com.